from the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Media Knoxville. This show belongs to you at 656-9900. 656-9900. The sports you need before sunrise is on the air. You're inside the starting lineup with Tyler Ivins and Will West on 99.1. The Sports Animal.
It is the starting lineup, 99.1, the Sports Animal. Will West, Eric Kane here with you. 656-9900 is always the phone number that you can get on board with us. A whole lot to get to today. A little more clarity to what the NBA is planning to do. It does look like that we're going to have Major League Baseball, maybe some way, some shape, some form. There is at least that. We got a little bit more clarity on the possible 50-game plan that maybe that was less of a poison pill that's there, stuck there in case they want to play, and a little more of a threat to players, I guess we found out. The NFL has set up rules for training camps. You will not see training camp sites at other places. And Zion Williamson, it's an under-the-radar story right now, but Zion Williamson took a very big hit. Duke took a very big hit with Zion Williamson yesterday in a Florida court. We'll start with the NBA. It does look like we get a little bit more clarity to what the NBA is going to do. The model that they have, according to Adrian Wojnarowski at about 5 o'clock yesterday, is for July 31st resumption of the season in Orlando. 22 teams would be involved. We kind of knew that. Last possible date for an NBA Finals game, 7, October 12th. So they must be, 3 games a week minimum probably is what they're looking at, if not 4 games a week during this time. And from there, that probably would get you about to October 12th. Now, what does it mean for the rest of the season? For what we see from NBA insiders, the television money for Christmas Day games is too high. So what you would have is a season that probably starts on Christmas Day with the National Basketball Association, and you really only get about a month and a half off for those teams that are there in the finals. Players are not going to be happy about that, but at the end of the day, if it gets this season going in and everybody gets paid, it is what it is, and they'll take their money and they'll just have to suck that one up a little bit. I did not think players would be okay with just a month and a half off. I thought they would need at least 2 months off. Maybe we don't have much of a preseason or something like that. But either way, or maybe they decide, hey, we're going to wait until January before these teams competing in the NBA Finals actually have to play their first game. But it does look like that is the new scenario for the National Basketball Association. Eric Kane, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Doing well. So yesterday, it was a little different. We had a pretty peaceful day during the daytime yesterday. Outside of the Northwest, it was a very peaceful day of protests yesterday. It was it was weird. So I'm watching the news yesterday, starting about 5 o'clock, and I'm watching CNN, and the CNN reporter that's in D.C., no problems whatsoever. In New York, no problems whatsoever. In Atlanta, no problems. It's just across the country, no problems at all. A lot of places I saw yesterday that there was a march in Oak Ridge, and police marched with protesters in Oak Ridge, which, again, I keep saying it, our law enforcement in East Tennessee has been so spectacular and continues to be, and we appreciate our law enforcement here in East Tennessee. But the only places that we had issues, there was an issue in Seattle where protesters are standing there, it's peaceful, it's fine. A guy walks in, I don't know if you've seen the video, there's a guy that walks up from behind the crowd, but from the back of the crowd, and I was going to be real, he's a white guy, grabs the barricade, and the police pepper spray and tear gas the protesters up front once the guy grabbed the barricade. And they yell at him, stop, don't grab the barricade, what are you doing? And the guy grabs the barricade, police tear gas and pepper spray the protesters from that point that are out there, even though they're like, hey, we got him off the barricade. Not a great situation there. Portland last night had some ugliness with protesters firing tear gas into the police and things like that. That's not okay. That's not okay at all. And so that was a problem. And then, what's weird is this. In Philadelphia, they didn't have a problem whatsoever. And there was a march that went down to a certain part of the city, according to the reporter from CNN, who was there inside the protesters, walking with them as they did this. And when they walked back up, the police officers that left and they were marching with the and you know walking along with the protesters there. That everything was peaceful, no problem. That I guess the people that were coming in were going to be the night shift, and they had riot gear on, and then there was a problem, right? But the one thing we saw yesterday is we didn't see any attacks from police. We didn't see any attacks from, you know, from white supremacists or Antifa or anything like that that were there, or the Boogaloo Boys, whichever some people say maybe now it's just militant groups that are doing that, that are kind of anarchists as opposed to white supremacists, whatever they might be. And we didn't have problems yesterday. So that it's interesting to me that, like, if you, whenever somebody tries to meet dissatisfaction with force to quell that dissatisfaction, it just leads to the other side trying to use force as well, and we end up having problems all night. Last night we didn't have problems. You did have a group of people that tried to march from Brooklyn into Manhattan. There was a curfew in Manhattan. Police set up a barricade and said, no, you can't come in here. Protesters marched back peacefully the other way. There were no problems whatsoever. So it was a different way of policing this yesterday across our nation, it seemed like. And once that different way of policing them happened, and there were protesters happened, there weren't problems. And so I thought yesterday, especially considering that 2 days ago was probably the worst night for violence that we had seen, it was good that yesterday was almost across the board a peaceful day altogether without an issue. And that is very good to see, I think, Eric.
Yeah, I think it's great to see. I think it's a step in the direction of where we can, you know, hope and just kind of pray that the violence is going to stop, because it's been, you know, three or four continuous days of where we've seen peaceful protests turn to rioting, turn to looting, turn to fighting between, you know, groups of people and, you know, National Guards or, you know, police forces and all that. And you never, ever, ever want that, especially at the accelerated rate that it's been the last couple of weeks. So I thought yesterday, seeing that things had calmed down just a little bit, now there were still, just like right here in Oak Ridge, I mean, there were still peaceful protests being taken place all across our country, and that is 100% fine, and that's never been the issue. The issue's been whenever it's gone to that, you know, whenever it's turned sour and it's gone to something else, you know, something more than what it was intended for. And, you know, the fact that almost nationwide yesterday, outside of a few cities and outside of a few incidences, it looked like things started to calm down yesterday, and you just hope that that's going to be the case for the, you know, next few days as we round out this week.
Yeah, it's the one place, again, two places we had, it was one incident in Seattle where the guy grabbed the barricade and the police still tear gas and pepper sprayed the protesters there. And then the only other place that we had the issue, it seemed like last night, was in Portland, and there was a peaceful protest going on, and there's no explanation, but police at about 2 a.m. just started yelling at them, This is an unlawful protest. And then no one, so they're yelling, okay, why? And then all of a sudden police start shooting tear gas and pepper spray into the crowd. Well, then the crowd starts shooting fireworks into the police. And it was just an ugly situation in Portland last night. It did turn out that the peaceful protesters marched back to another position in Portland, and there were no problems. As of about 3 hours ago, they were still there. So it doesn't seem like there was a lot of a problem in that. Outside of Portland, we don't see a lot of problems yesterday. And I think that's a lot of it, too, is that when the police show people that, hey, you're heard and there's not a problem here, it does, like, at least yesterday, there were problems there. So that was a good thing. And to peacefully protest in this country, let's be honest, there's a lot of people. It's one of the reasons a lot of people didn't like CAP. I thought CAP, I've said it at the time, right? I wanted CAP to win because I don't think that when I didn't think Trayvon Martin. I mean, the police told George Zimmerman, don't chase after him with the gun. He chased after him with the gun. He disobeyed a police order. He chased a 15-year-old who was standing in front of his aunt's house. And when he got there and caught up to him a mile later, and he has a gun in his hand, the kid tries to defend himself. George Zimmerman shoots him, and he's able to get off on that. Right? Things like that, I thought, have to stop happening. And let's be honest, if that kid was white, there's no way George Zimmerman's not going to be not in jail. So I had a problem with that, and I wanted a Kaepernick to win. I didn't like some of the way that Kaepernick went about some of the things. Like, Kaepernick would have been playing for the Baltimore Ravens had Kaepernick's girlfriend not posted a picture about the Baltimore Ravens being a slave owner. And as they were literally in the middle of discussions of them signing Kaepernick, the girlfriend posts that, they say, there's no way we're doing this. All right. And so they just shut the whole thing down. So I didn't like that kind of thing about CAP. But a lot of it with CAP is that people just don't want to see protesting. And a lot of it about Ferguson is there are a lot of people in the country that just don't want to see protesting. Look, people have a right to peacefully assemble and protest in the United States of America. And you cannot like it or not like it. That's fine. But that's their absolute constitutionally protected right. It didn't get violent last night. We didn't have those types of issues last night. That seems like outside of Portland. And then yesterday, we're seeing all day long the people who are there during the day, no problems. Then sometimes people at night, there are problems. Last night, most of these cities, we didn't see it. And I think that's a step in the right direction. So for those of you that don't want to see the protests, you're going to see protests. It's what's going to happen, and you're just going to have to suck that one up. As long as it's a peaceful protest, that's all we can ask for. And that's just something people are going to have to get over, is that desire to not see protests because, you know, it's 2020 for now and I just don't want to see them anymore. It's been effective, too, because when you're seeing how many people have changed their opinion, who have changed their mind, how many brands who have put out statements, how many sports teams that have put out statements, people who have would never in a million years have backed something like this, even 5 years ago, backing these protests as this is going on right now. So it's these protests have been effective out there, the peaceful protests that we've seen. So that's been a good thing. We'll get to more sports today because we can, and that's good. That's a really good thing that we can get to more sports today. But we are seeing society evolve. We're seeing a society change with this, and it's going to be, I think everything for the first time in about 5 days feels like everything's at least going to be all right moving forward, and that's a good thing. Going to come back on the other side. The NFL has put out new guidance for opening training camps with National Football League teams. Not huge changes, but a little bit of a change. Also, a major school, the first big major Power 5 school, has said we will have students on campus for classes coming up in the fall. We'll tell you about that next. It is the Starting Lineup, 99.1. Here's Eric King with the Tennessee Lottery Sports Update.
This is a Tennessee Education Lottery Sports Minute.
NASCAR is set to return to the Music City in 2021 at Nashville Speedway, ending a decade-long drought of no NASCAR Cup Series races. Nashville will host a Cup Series race in late June of 2021. Last hosted NASCAR and IndyCar events in 2011. The NBA's 22-team restart model that is believed to begin on July 31st in Orlando has a timeline where the last possible date for a Finals Game 7 would be on October the 12th. Commissioner Adam Silver is expected to take the proposal to the NBA Board of Governors Thursday for a vote. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell announced every team must hold training camps at their main practice facilities this summer due to COVID-19. Teams will also not be allowed to hold joint camp practices with other teams this summer. And the Navy Notre Dame football game set for August 29th in Dublin, Ireland has been moved to the Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium in Annapolis, Maryland. That game is likely to be played on Labor Day weekend. Notre Dame announced that news Tuesday morning. 6:14, going to check out the roads, Pete Michaels traffic. Good morning. I'm Eric Kane.
The Starting Lineup with Tyler and Will, 6 to 9 a.m. on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
So the National Football League has put out guidance for teams when it comes to training camp, how they will run training camps. Looks like training camp's going to pop off on time for the NFL. The one thing that's going to be different is they will not be doing it on different sites. You're going to have to do it on your practice field. You will not have inter-squad scrimmages, so there is at least that. A lot of times you would see the Redskins and the Cowboys get into a scrimmage, or the Bills and the, you know what I mean, and the Falcons do a scrimmage somewhere. Falcons go to Swanee and do it for years, and they've done their scrimmage or their training camp there. I guess probably the Titans, I'm assuming, would still be able to do their thing over at the Baptist Hospital training grounds and things like that. But that is the one change for the NFL with training camp, is that you can't do it off-site on these college campuses like we've seen them do that in the past. And you're going to have to do it there. You can do it on your field. You can do it on your practice field. You can do it inside of your stadium. They did include stadiums in that. But not a ton of change when it comes to the NFL, Eric Kane, as far as what they're doing for training camp. But there is a slight change. You're not going to see those. There's a lot of small towns that I know, the one that the Packers have, the one that the Pittsburgh Steelers go to. There's somebody that gives a bike to. The kids all give their bikes and loan them to the players as they go from the dormitory that they stay in over to the field for training camp. You're not going to have those moments because of COVID-19, but training camp is going to pop off on time, and I think that's a good thing all around.
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate that you're not going to have those moments to where you go to these college campuses, these smaller towns, and have, you know, these types of interactions with the fan bases. I mean, I know people every single year they go to Titans training camp at the Badger training grounds. I know people that, you know, go down to, you know, New York Yankees spring training every summer. That type of situation is kind of the same thing. But nonetheless, this isn't a huge shakeup. It'll get these football players, especially the vets, out of the routine of, okay, so you come back, you have the offseason. Yeah, the organized voluntary workouts, you probably pass on those. You got some mini camps you go to get some time off. Then you come back for camp, you go to location. And it's just kind of a routine type deal. But, you know, despite not going out on location to your normal spot for your training camps, you get to have it at your team facility, which you're very familiar with. It's where you have practices during the season regardless, and so that's okay. And, you know, no practices are being canceled. So, again, it's everyone's still on the same playing field. You're still getting that work in. Although I do think this is kind of noteworthy. You can't hold joint practices, can't hold those scrimmages with, you know, as you were pointing out, the Cowboys and the Redskins, whatever it may be. That's a good chance to get a lot of work in. And not much for the veterans, not much for your ones per se, except for drillings and one-on-ones for receiver DBs and, you know, running back, linebacker, stuff like that, tight ends. But more or less for your twos, your threes, and trying to round out, you know, cutting that roster down from the 93 you bring in to the 53. And so that's a good chance. I mean, outside of preseason games, good chance to get a look at your guys that are going to make up the back end of your roster. So from that perspective, it's a little noteworthy. But overall, I mean, it's you're not losing any practice time. So it kind of expected due to the coronavirus. So it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, it's a continued progress, I think, right? A continued progression into a little bit more normalcy with everything going on with coronavirus. And we'll see what happens if there ends up being a second wave that hits when the weather gets cold again. If this thing does work like the flu and things like that, where, well, it's flu season, then we have COVID season, right? Once we get to the fall, we'll find out how that goes. But at least right now, it does look like the NBA, we get a date. Weird date, but at least July 31st, it does look like. And why only 22 teams? I don't know. And why is it not 16 for the playoffs? I don't know. Why not all teams? I don't know. But 22 teams is the number that they've kind of met with right now. And they're going to get going July 31st. NFL training camp is going to go on time. It just won't be on those college campuses and in those small towns. But it's everything's turning in the right direction for us to get sports proper coming up soon. One other quick note that I want to throw out there is that I don't know if you saw this, Eric, but there was but yesterday that we saw USC announced that we'll have students on campus for classes coming up this fall. Every class will also be offered online, and that way if you don't feel comfortable sending your kid there to live in the dorm with the kids, so once they get their education, all classes are going to be offered online as well, and they can take those classes online and do distance learning. So there is at least that. But that's been the big thing that I've thought about when we talk about student athletes coming back to campus in June for some leagues and July for some other leagues and things like that. Was that tells us that they're going to have to, for them to have football this season, you can't say our football players are on campus and they're practicing, but our students are not going to be on campus. USC, as far as I can see so far, as far as I'm aware of, is the first school to say, yes, we're going to have students on campus, but we're going to offer the option to take every single class online if you don't feel comfortable on being back on campus. I think that's probably what we're going to see from everybody, including the University of Tennessee, is classes will be available online if you don't feel comfortable being here, but we're going to have students on campus because, again, you can't say student-athletes are student-athletes unless you also have the students on campus, if the players have to be on campus, right?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. During all my prep work for, you know, the show this morning and just, you know, everything going on in the country, I must have missed USC making that announcement. Now I've seen various schools, including the University of Tennessee, come out and say, our intention is to have students on campus here in the fall. Our intention, that is what we're planning on doing. That's what we hope to happen. But for USC to come out and say that we will have them on there, but also give that option for the online learning. And you know, the online learning shouldn't be something hard to adapt to because, you know, that's how pretty much every single university finished out the spring semester. That's how a lot of these high schoolers or high schools around the country, especially the ones in, you know, high income areas, really finished out their spring semesters as well. So given that option to where you can come on campus, it's open, come on, but if you don't want to, you can do it online. I think that's a good model that, as you pointed out, you're going to see a lot of universities, especially, you know, the Power Five landscape for the tie in terms of athletics and need to get their athletic teams out there to kind of follow, saying, okay, well, our campus is open, but if you don't want to come, you can take online courses. My only question there would be, is there any type of cutoff? Say you have a, 35,000, you know, enrollment and, 22,000 choose to stay home. Is there any type of cutoff there to where you say, okay, well, you only have X amount of students on campus, you can't go play sports, you can't go play games? I don't know the answer to that. I wouldn't think so, but that's something to think about.
Yeah, I would think that as long as you have the option for them to be on campus and live on campus in the dorms, then you can have the players that are required to be on campus for their scholarship. I'm assuming you probably also will have to honor a scholarship if a player does not feel comfortable being on campus, if they've got, you know, some type of immune compromise or family with an immune compromise or something like that. You're going to have to offer that option to the players as well, I think, since you're offering it to the regular students. But that's one thing that I've kind of wondered with this is, okay, you're going to have to have the kids on campus this fall. And everyone said that, again, like you mentioned, they intend to have students on campus this fall. But if you want to have players on campus, you got to have students on campus, point blank. Otherwise, what you're telling everyone is these are employees, and you're already getting crushed in the courts right now for the NCAA. So that's one thing I think that you have to talk to the member institutions about at the NCAA is you got to find a way to have students on campus, period, if you want those football and basketball players on campus so that you can make that revenue off of these college athletics. Looks like the maybe USC has set the model that I think a lot of other people will probably follow. We'll come back on the other side. I want to talk about the Zion Williamson case because it's an under-the-radar story right now because it's not sexy that they lose an appeal in a court battle. But when you read everything to it and you see what this means, this could get very interesting, and it could get very interesting from the bluest of blue bloods in all of college basketball. We'll talk about it next. This is the Starting Lineup, 99.1 The Sports Animal. We'll be back on the other side to talk about possibly Coach K and Duke going down if the NCAA decides to do something here on The Animal.
This is BFL Josh Malone, and we're counting it down. It is just
94 days until
it's football time in Tennessee.
This Sports Radio WNML countdown to kickoff is brought to you by Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Find out more at tvacreditunion.com. Go on!
So, Zion Williamson and, frankly, Duke basketball took a big hit yesterday. As, if you're not aware, Zion Williamson is in a court battle right now in the state of Florida because there is a sports marketing firm that is suing Zion for $100 million, claiming they signed a contract with Zion when he was in college, and that they gave benefits, illegal, what would have been impermissible benefits to Zion Williamson and his family while he was in Duke and before he was at Duke. If you don't remember, Zion, it was a different story. It wasn't like just your normal five-star kid. He had 4 million followers on Instagram before he ever, you know, had a tip-off at Duke, or did a practice there. So a sports marketing firm suing Zion Williamson saying that he owes them $100 million in damages and in compensatory money for money that he took from them and his family took from them because he had signed a deal to let them be the sports marketing firm that he would use. Zion has since gone to CAA, one of the bigger sports marketing firms, and the sports marketing firm suing him is suing, saying that they would like the judge to void the contract. Zion Williamson's team is saying that agent was not – they're not saying it didn't happen – they're saying that agent was not a registered agent in the state of North Carolina, where Zion played basketball. If you remember, there was that situation, and it was kind of big news a few years ago, where the state of North Carolina said it is a crime for you to get your kids, our kids, or kids that played our colleges, to sign a deal with you while they're in college, especially if you're not a certified agent with the state of North Carolina. So the company tried to get Zion to testify under oath about the money and the impermissible benefits that they gave him and that he may have received otherwise while going to Duke. Zion Williamson's side had filed an injunction and asked the court not to have him testify, saying that it's not going to help anything anyway because what they're asking, the contract that he signed with them should be null and void either way. Yesterday, Zion Williamson lost, and his legal team lost. And so Zion Williamson, according to the judge, will have to testify under oath about impermissible benefits that he received while he was at Duke. On a scale of 1 to 10, how big of a problem for the Duke Blue Devils is this, Eric Kane?
Well, I mean, I've got to say that you would think that it's going to be, you know, a 7, you know, up there, because it looks like it's kind of laid out there that he broke the rules and he was receiving improper benefits from Nike's, Adidas, and, you know, persons on behalf of Duke and people associated with Duke. So it looks like it's going to be, you know, it's going to be some penalties are coming. But again, I'll go back to, you know, when this story first came out a couple of weeks ago. I mean, Will Wade's still coaching basketball. You know, Arizona State's still operating. Arizona's still operating right now. Bruce Pearl still has a job. There's been so many circumstances to where violations. I mean, Will Wade's on a wiretap. You know, I mean, there's so many different situations to where, you know, coaches and or players have been proven that have taken improper benefits or breaking the rules, and it seems like nothing seems to happen. And especially with this being Duke and the Duke brand, I have a hard time feeling they're going to come down hard on Duke when they're not coming hard down on, you know, LSU. But it looks like the proof's in the pudding here, and that Zion obviously did break some rules, and he's going to have to answer for that.
I don't know. Do you buy into too big to fail when it comes to some college programs? Like, a few years ago when the Derrick Rose thing happened, it turned out that Derrick Rose had people taking his test for him at Memphis, and his brother received some impermissible benefits that were, at least we know that happened. There was allegations of other money that was given, but that was never proven to Derrick Rose and his family. But we know that the brother was allowed to fly on a private plane, and that would have equaled out to about, I don't know, around $10,000-$12,000. And that is the thing that they eventually were able to pop Memphis with when John Calipari was there. At the same time, though, that same summer, after Kansas beat Memphis in the national title game, it turned out that that the school in Dallas where Darrell Arthur and another Kansas player played in high school gave fake grades out to players and ended up getting shut down. And so they shouldn't have, in the same way that Derrick Rose having someone else take a standardized test for him was a violation, getting a fake degree from a school that didn't actually make you take classes and handed out fake grades, and was just virtually like an AAU program that had fake classes outside of that, that should have been the same way, right? It should have been the same exact thing for Kansas as it was for Memphis.
And to your point, what happened in North Carolina when they were doing that?
You know? Yeah, oh yeah.
I mean, well, for years and years.
Yeah, and that one was a terrible loophole, but the loophole was that, well, everybody was offered that. So it wasn't just student-athletes, so it's not an impermissible benefit if all students are offered the ability to take this one class and to get a free grade. This was the things that would have made Derrick Rose eligible with his standardized tests. That was fraudulent, so because of that, Derrick Rose shouldn't have been eligible for Memphis, period. Well, the same thing would have happened should have happened to Kansas, and we all knew that it happened because that school got shut down, yet you never saw, the same way the Final Four was stripped from Memphis, you never saw the championship get stripped from Kansas. Ever since then, I have kind of, this happened probably, I don't remember what year that was. Was it 07, something like that, 08?
No.
Since then, I've always had the theory that there are schools who are too big to fail in the NCAA, and I think Duke's one of those schools that's too big to fail and the NCAA. We've seen people like Corey Maggette and things like that talk about getting impermissible benefits from Duke, and nothing's ever happened of it. Frankly, the media's never really picked up it. Marvin Bagley, right? We've talked about this. The Oregonian, dead to rights, Marvin Bagley III's father was had over $40,000 in debt, was in bankruptcy, and within a year, the son signs at Duke. Marvin Bagley's an employee of Nike. Marvin Bagley Jr. is an employee at Nike. And they live in a $775,000 home in a gated community in Los Angeles. So that was within 1 year. So what happened that changed all of these things? Marvin Bagley went to Duke. So that's what changed that. Yet you didn't see anything come of that whatsoever. It was just, here's this report, dead to rights, have all the documentation in order. Nothing happened. So this on the surface looks very, very bad. Because it's Zion, it's going to get a lot more scrutiny, and it's going to get a lot more eyeballs on it than happened with Marvin Bagley or Corey Maggette 8 years later, or Daryl Arthur at Kansas, or even Derrick Rose probably at Memphis. But it's going to get a lot of eyeballs. But I think you're probably right, Eric. I mean, if Will Wade's still coaching basketball, and I know Will Wade was offering this more money than the NBA minimum to players to come there, because he's told us. Yeah. We heard him say that. And he's still coaching basketball right now, and nothing's happened to them. There's no chance in the world you're going to come after Duke if you're not coming after LSU, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I just have a hard time, you know, believing anything big's going to happen from this. When you look at the campaign Zion was at Duke anyway, you talk about Derrick Rose that, you know, went to the finals. You talk about the Kansas team, you know, beat Memphis in the finals that year in the NCAA championship game. You know, that was an Elite Eight team for Duke. So it's not a Final Four. You know, it's not a national championship. You're not hanging any banners. Nonetheless, it doesn't give you any reason not to go after Duke. But still, even if you were to vacate a season, vacate the wins, it would really only come back on Coach K and his win total. I still don't see that happening, though, because, again, I just continue to go back for him. I mean, we've seen things of this nature, things just like this, quite frankly, things even worse, you know, from head coaches around the country, and nothing has been done from it. So, you know, the NCAA, I mean, this goes on everywhere. I mean, you know, you can't be naive to it. It goes on many, many, many more places than you can even imagine. And some schools get caught, but nothing ever happens to it. So it looks like Zion obviously took, you know, benefits that he, you know, wasn't allowed to. He broke some rules. People at Duke broke some rules for him. But I'm just going to be interested to see what actually comes of this from the NCAA, because I don't think much will.
The one thing that I wonder is, what's the point of the NCAA anymore if this is going to be the case, right? Because, and I've said this for a decade, everybody that's ever done this for any matter of time, and Eric, you may have been done this for a long enough time at this point too to know enough people around college athletics. Everybody can tell a story about just about every big player of exactly how much money they got paid and who paid them and who was the bag man and who was the, like, I mean, honestly, if you send anybody who's been working for 5 years in the sports media to any college campus, they could tear that college campus down if the NCAA wanted, like, would actually enforce the things that were found. Like, it's that easy, it's that blatant, it's that quick, it's that out in the open, how that players are getting paid money from boosters and from shoe companies and things like that. I mean, look, we know the Chicago Tribune told us how much Anthony Davis got paid, right? I mean, we know that. So, yeah. I mean, to go to Kentucky. Like, so, and what happened of it? Nothing. So what's the point of the NCAA at this point if nothing's going to happen? Again, anybody, and I mean literally anybody that has worked in sports media for 5 years could walk into Ole Miss or Mississippi State or Tennessee or Georgia, or, and it may be old stuff for some of those schools, because I don't think anybody knows. I haven't been told anything about anybody since while Donnie was here, yes. Konzo, no. Rick Barnes, no. But it's just so blatant that cheating is happening that it's interesting for me to see how they pick and choose what they're going to do. The NCAA is trying to get Bill Self gone at Kansas. That's clearly happening right now. Now, if Will Wade's still there and Sean Miller's still there, they're going to lose, and they're not going to win. So if that is the case, what is the point of the NCAA anymore if they're not going to be able to enforce anything that happens when we know blatant cheating is happening all over the place?
And you said it right there, too, you know, pick and choose. I mean, look, Chase Young had to sit out two games, you know, this past season because he gave a bowl ticket to his girlfriend for a bowl game Ohio State played in a year and a half prior. And, you know, North Carolina students had to sit out three games because they were selling their shoes and some team memorabilia when Urban Meyer was suspended two games for all the crap he's done in the last decade. You're exactly, I mean, it's twisted to begin with. What, you know, what they choose to go after, what they choose to penalize, it's easier for the NCAA to prove and get it done. So I kind of get all that. But you're going after all this stuff, yet you're letting all this stuff slide. I mean, it's a whole corrupt organization, and then, you know, we know that.
Yeah, and I don't even know the NCAA. I've always thought that there's this, like, invisible line somewhere that maybe the schools know, but we don't know of when they'll go tear somebody down, because they went and tore down Ole Miss, right? We had far more documented about Alabama football than we did about Ole Miss football. So why in the world didn't you go tear down Alabama? I'm assuming there's some invisible line that they cross. I don't know if there's a lot of people that know this. When Lane Kiffin was here, they were coming for Tennessee, coming. Like, it was terrible that Lane left after just one season and left in the dead of night and tried to blow up the recruiting class and all of those things. they were coming. It was the best thing that ever happened to Tennessee that Lane Kiffin got out of here before. Now, you don't go hire Derek Dooley after that, but that Lane Kiffin got out of here when he did, because the NCAA and everybody that I know that was around it says the NCAA was coming for Tennessee because Lane Kiffin put a bullseye on their backs. So I think there's some invisible, here are the real rules you can't break, but we'll let you do these other things. It's why I don't understand why they don't just run, not walk, to get name, image, and likeness passed. That way, everything's on the up and up. If a booster wants to hand money to a player to come there, okay, cool. If a shoe company wants to say, hey, here's $160,000 for a guy to go from Chicago to the University of Kentucky, but we're going to make him sign a contract with us too. The money's on the up and up. The money is taxed. Players have to learn the hard way that if you do something dumb on campus, it hurts your money. And that's something that I can't understand the pushback on, and the pushback from the NCAA on, a pushback from some fans on. The money's already changing hands. Why in the world not just, instead of having a black market to get those players, just make the money on the up and up, let everybody pay taxes on it, and let players have to learn how to manage their money before they get in the NBA and they get handed millions of dollars. I think it's a win-win for everybody. But look, we all know Zion Williamson took money to go to Duke, right? I mean, that's without question. Mm-hmm. We do it from the Kansas tapes that Zion took money that they said can't. Well, I guess that's not a smoking gun, but we knew that the people of Kansas were saying the money, that talked about the money that Zion Williamson got to go to Duke. So why not just let Nike hand that money to Zion Williamson and his family, or them to sign it with a marketing firm before he goes there? If the marketing firm ends up missing out on it because Zion ends up being a bust, that was their money. They decided to, they rolled the dice. They had a gamble. They lost. And the bet didn't pay off for them. But let them be the ones that make that bet at the end of the day, so that they, and let these guys get the money on the up and up, because it is absolutely happening. When Zion gets on the stand, we're going to find out that Zion took impermissible benefits from Nike, from marketing agency, from people at Duke. And it shouldn't surprise anyone. But I don't think the NCAA is going to do anything to tear the Duke Blue Devils down. I think they're going to try to just walk away and whistle past the graveyard on it.
Yeah, I would agree. And we've seen it before. We're seeing it again. I think this is going to be the same type of situation when this thing all plays out, because he did lose in court. His legal team lost in court yesterday, but I don't think he's going to lose all that much, or Duke's going to lose all that much when it's all said and done.
Absolutely nothing. Literally not a single thing. That's Eric Kane. I'm Will West. We'll come back on the other side. It is time for John a Wednesday. Right now it's time for their Tennessee Lottery Sports Update.
This is a Tennessee Education Lottery Sports Minute.
South Carolina men's basketball coach Frank Martin announced he had tested positive and has recovered from COVID-19. The Gamecocks coach said he tested positive for the virus in early May while in preparation for a knee replacement, self-quarantined himself, and then tested negative during a follow-up test on May 23rd. Elsewhere in college hoops, a Florida State court judge on Tuesday said New Orleans Pelicans rookie Zion Williamson must answer questions from attorneys representing Prime Sports Marketing on his eligibility under NCAA rules when he played at Duke. The agency is suing Williamson for $100 million of breaching their marketing agreements. The field at Miller Park was damaged early Tuesday morning when a man broke into the park prior to being apprehended by police. The team said it has launched a full investigation into the matter. And the Buccaneers tied in Rob Gronkowski's reign as WWE 24/7 title holder has come to an end after 58 days. WWE aired a brief episode when it showed R-Truth disguising himself as a landscaper, jumping out and blindsiding Gronk in his own backyard for the pen. R-Truth has been the most prolific holder of the 24/7 title since its inception in May of 2019. 6:46, get a check on the roads, P. Michael's traffic. Good morning, I'm Eric Kane.
His body is like a porterhouse steak. Little fat on the edges for extra flavor. Tyler Ivins and Will West on the starting lineup. 99.1. The Sports Animal.
Oh, make me over. I'm all I want to be. A walking study.
Final segment of the first hour of the starting lineup. 99.1. The Sports Animal. Will West here with you along with Eric Kane, and it's time now for Woodja.
Woodja, language of origin, not of this world. Definition, a segment written by the producer of the show, allowing the host to answer the tough questions of the morning. Spelling, W-O-L-D-J-A. Get all that? Powered by New Balance Knoxville in the Suburban Shopping Center.
All right, Will, Rob Gronkowski, I'll put this one in here just for you. Rob Gronkowski had his WWE 24/7 title stripped from him earlier this week from R-Truth, Who would you say would be easier to take the title away from, Gronk or R-Truth?
I think it's Gronk because of the history of injuries that he's had. That's the biggest reason why with that. R-Truth actually is a wrestler, so if you're trying to wrestle R-Truth, that's probably not going to work out as well as wrestling Rob Gronkowski. With Gronk going back into football, it makes sense from a storyline perspective for them to put this back on R-Truth. The 24/7 title, I'll be honest, I'm not watching a ton lately. I'm just not a big fan of the product. On Raw especially, but it's more of a comedy piece that they use, and R-Truth is fantastic with those.
You know, I couldn't tell you if R-Truth walked by me here in the studio, I couldn't tell you that was him. I just don't know. But what I will say is I did some research last night, and goodness, this man, it's only been since May of 2019 this thing's been a thing, this 24/7 title. He has owned it like, you know, probably nine different times for a span of what, you know, like a day, all the way to like 58 days to, you know, 40 days. I mean, the dude just continues to get this title back and forth, back and forth. So I say from that perspective, it would be easier to get away from Gronk as well, because R-Truth seems like he's taken a lot of pride in it. A man was quickly apprehended by police Tuesday morning after breaking into Miller Park and committing a minimal damage to the field. Which MLB park would you most like to break into after hours? Would it be Fenway Park, Wrigley Field, New Yankee Stadium, or any other?
It would be Fenway. That's the one that I would like to just be able to walk around after hours and just check out everything and just look at it. It would be Fenway. And a lot of that's the monster. A lot of it's because it's still old school like that. I am a Dodgers fan, but Dodger Stadium is what it is. That's the Braves Stadium. You know, it's, you know, SunTrust. Or no, what is it called now?
Call it by its name. It's
what
Truist,
is it now?
It's Truist Park.
Truist Park, which again sounds like Molin Water from Seinfeld. I'm good on that. But give me one of these venerable old club, old parks like Fenway, like Wrigley. Fenway is probably the one I would roll with, though.
You know, there are so many other parks I haven't been to yet, so for that reason, I want to say Miller Park, Dodger Stadium, some other parks I just haven't been to yet, but I'm going to roll with the old ballparks, like you said. It's got to be Fenway for me. There is a seat, and I think I've talked to you about this before. I went to a game at Fenway Park, and I took the stadium tour on game day, but it was the last one right before the game. So they were doing batting practice and everything, so I got to sit on the monster when they were doing batting practice. That was awesome. The monster, by the way, looks very uncomfortable on television. It was a lot. It was very spacious, looked really cool. And there's a seat out in the right field bleacher area. There's a seat that had been there all the way since like 1910 or something, and I want to sit in that seat. So I would definitely do that if I were at Fenway Park. So that's my answer. Behind Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields, who would you say is the best quarterback entering the 2020 football season? Is it Sam Howell of Carolina or Sam Ehlinger of Texas?
I will say, can I go with other?
Yeah.
Other is what I'll go with. Shane Buechel. Shane Buechel of SMU, I think, is the best quarterback in college football. That is not Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields right now. And I know Sam Ehlinger took his job, but I think that Buechel has progressed as a better passer than that Sam Ehlinger has.
I'm gonna go Howell, Carolina. You know, freshman last year, threw for over 30 touchdowns, had just a really, really nice campaign. All the headlines are going to be Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields, as they should be. But I think the Carolina now sophomore Sam Howell is going to have a big, big monster year. He's going to be kind of in that class once those two guys get drafted next season.
Who's a comes-out-of-nowhere guy, right? Because we've seen Baker Mayfield was a comes-out-of-nowhere guy. Usually it's a transfer. He was a comes-out-of-nowhere guy. Fields was last year's comes-out-of-nowhere guy-ish. Who's the comes-out-of-nowhere guy this year? I mean, Joe Burrow was comes-out-of-nowhere guy last year.
It's got to be – it's got to be Rattler at Oklahoma, right? It's got to be.
Probably. It probably is.
And, again, that's putting a lot on Lincoln Riley. But again, keep in mind, as you pointed out – could it be the fourth straight quarterback out of Oklahoma to be a Heisman frontrunner? I mean, maybe. So we'll have to see. I would say Rattler at Oklahoma with the tutelage of Lincoln Riley. Moving on, today is National Running Day. Who would you say is the best college football running back in 2020? Is it Chuba Hubbard of Oklahoma State or Travis Etienne of Clemson?
Okay, Travis Etienne's been at Clemson for 11 years. And so why did he
come back? He's already the school leader in rushing yards. I have to sound good.
I have absolutely no idea. But Travis Etienne, it feels like Wayne Gallman, how long ago was it that he was there, right? And he already, like, he's been with the Giants multiple years. I think he's about to be on a second contract. And Travis Etienne's still at school. It is Chuba Hubbard. Chuba Hubbard last year was a dominant force with not a great offensive line in front of him, and he was averaging like 8 yards a carry, which is just stupid. Chuba Hubbard was the most underrated player in college football, period, last year.
You know, the former is going to get the most, or the latter, excuse me, is going to get the most name recognition because, again, he's been there forever. You know his name. He's played there at Clemson. But it is Chuba Hubbard. He had just a fantastic season at Oklahoma State, where in the Big 12, and you throw it all around, air it out, that really that run game for Oklahoma State was phenomenal last year, and I think it's going to be good again this year. Last one. Who would you say are worse people? CrossFitters or social media influencers?
See, I don't have a problem with CrossFitters. If they want to go do their thing, go do their thing, man. I'm totally good with CrossFitters. So now there is a CrossFitter vegan, people who don't own a television, and atheists. You know if you have a friend who is those or who are those things, because they're going to tell you, and they're going to tell you repeatedly.
Yeah, that's what
influencers are the worst. I don't know if you saw the picture from LA.
I saw it.
The lady and her husband rolling up in the Mercedes SUV for her to jump out, grab a drill, pretend like she's helping rebuild a business, take a picture, and then jump right back in the car.
Oh, I didn't see that one. I thought you were going to talk about the, it looked like a boyfriend, girlfriend, 20s club, if I want to just ring the bell for me here. Jumping out in front of a Target, and she's in her yoga pants and everything, just taking some pictures right there in front of a Target that's been looted the night before. I mean, influencers are the clear answer here.
Yeah, it is the absolute worst.
And it makes me mad because you and I were big, you know, National Day of the Month guys and famous birthday guys. And we get on famous birthdays every night. We check for the next day. And all these people, social media influencers, TikTokers,
YouTubers, TikTokers, social media influencers.
Who are these people? They're not famous.
I've never seen any of them. You know, but apparently it's done by the most searches within that 24-hour period or something like that. It's how they do it. So when I see some, like, Al Pacino is behind some 17-year-old girl that does makeup tutorials on YouTube, and I'm like, oh, man, I hate all of you. You know, like, this is just so terrible.
You have, like, a toddler with no picture on there that's, like, turning 3 years old, and it just says family member. Who's family?
I know. That is what you brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. New Balance Knoxville, the suburban shopping center, the perfect fit every single time with the fit test that they have there. Made in USA product. You will love the quality. You will love the colorways. You will love the styles they have right now at New Balance Knoxville. We'll come back on the other side. The NBA plans a little bit more solidified as of 5 o'clock last night. We'll give you the update that Adrian Wojnarowski dropped on ESPN next. It is the starting lineup, 99.1, the Sports Animal.